This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
It's my opinion, man. My opinion changed. That was it.
I don't really care if you like him or not.
Say bad
you don't have to sleep with him.
Brooks.
You don't have to vacation with him. You don't have to do anything with him.
I didn't say bad things about Brooks. I said I don't think that he's good for you.
How do you know what's good for me?
That's my opinion!
Why don't you tell it to his face instead of me?
I've talked to him! Me and Brooks are better than me and you!
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
That's hysterical. First was Brooks Koepka.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Real Housewives of something?
Yeah, one of them.
Real Housewives of where?
I don't know.
I keep seeing.
I think Graham knew. Graham was like naming people as
I was
pulling that audio. I was like, Graham, you're like 20 years old.
Is this what I have to look forward to tomorrow when Graham's sitting in your chair?
I think so.
So I keep seeing the promo for Real Housewives of Dubai.
Okay.
And these are obviously, you know, the wives of multi millionaire, if not billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think of was like, you're not real housewives.
No.
You're just not. But I'm sure somebody watches that, so I watched like one episode of Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Okay.
Back in the day.
All right.
Like when it first started. All right, and now I'm just not. I think maybe the best one, I actually watched a couple of episodes of Real Housewives of Atlanta. Wasn't Kenny Smith's ex-wife part of that?
Was she?
Think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, Graham, was Kenny Smith?
Do we have a list of the cities that they did, Graham?
I don't know. Yeah.
Put Graham on it.
Graham, yeah, this is your homework assignment, Graham.
Today.
We need all of the real world.
Put Graham to work today.
Not the real world, but the Real Housewives.
Yeah, well, Real World is something that I was more of a Road Rules guy than a Real World guy. I've been very honest about that throughout. All right, it's the Adam Gold Show. Hope everybody is doing well. I'm Adam. That's Dennis. Graham's in the background already doing research. And Graham is going to hang out with us tomorrow. Now, Dennis, why are you not here again tomorrow?
I'm getting my next tattoo tomorrow. My appointment's at noon. You got to book those things in advance. It's the only time we can get.
I totally understand.
Number four for me.
Number four for you.
That's right.
Excellent. Excellent idea. I could never think of anything I wanted permanently on me.
Okay. That's fine.
So are we going to place our bets tomorrow?
Oh, we will.
Excellent.
I might be in the chair tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just getting that done.
Yeah.
We're wrapping up possibly.
All right. Well, I hope. Anyway, we'll place our bets today. I was 2-for-2 yesterday.
I was 0-for-3.
Wimbledon tennis has been good to me so far.
Yeah.
We're going to have to go back to the All England Club today.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know where. But there's a lot of things to discuss. Daniel Wallach is going to join us today for the legal. The NFL's got two legal issues in its way. You've got the stuff going on with Daniel Snyder, who is avoiding the subpoena. And I agree with him, frankly. There's no reason for him to go on Capitol Hill. There's really no reason for the NFL to be on Capitol Hill. They're just using the NFL as a high-profile, you know, workplace. It's all they're doing. And it's grandstanding on everybody's part. And, like, half the people there are not taking it seriously, and that's a problem. So you're just wasting everybody's time. But we'll talk to Daniel Wallach about that. We'll talk to Daniel Wallach about Deshaun Watson, whose hearing continues today, and the NFL seems to be ratcheting down its expectation for a suspension, which is good for Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
And maybe not good for the NFL and their image. But we will discuss those then. Right now, let's crank it up. We're actually going to get to Brooks Koepka here in a couple of minutes. I want to get to some other things first, because there was actually legit news being made yesterday by the PGA Tour that we're going to get to. But I'm going to keep it a little bit more local to start. The North Carolina State Legislature cannot figure out how to allow citizens the right to wager on sports, but they at least did recognize the importance of the Atlantic Coast Conference. Although, they didn't actually call it the Atlantic Coast Conference, and we'll explain that in a second.
Interesting.
Yeah. In a budget proposal that is now being kicked around the NCGA, and I believe they've agreed on it, and it still has to go to the governor, Roy Cooper, for approval and blah, blah, blah. But in a budget proposal, there is a $15 million line item earmarked towards keeping ACC headquarters in North Carolina. Now, the assumption is they're going to leave Greensboro and go to Charlotte. Or Charlotte is one of the two cities, Orlando being the other. So this is North Carolina's incentive to the Atlantic Coast Conference to stay here, home, if you will. But here's how it's kind of talked about in the bill. They don't call it the ACC. They call it a qualifying collegiate sports employer. As an entity with four charter members that are institutions of higher education in the state. I wonder what you could be talking about.
let's see. The Big South.
That is so great. That is so great.
Ah, the USA South Athletic Conference, Division III.
Right. So, look. I've made my feelings on this particular issue very plain. I cannot think of anything less relevant than where HQ is located. Mm-hmm. I can't. Nothing happens there. They don't play games there. Mm-mm. There's no games being played in the lobby. There are no matches. There are no press conferences there. They don't do anything there. They send out emails there. Right?
Yeah.
Whatever. There are employees there, but they don't do anything there. So I don't understand why it matters where your headquarters are.
My opinion on this is they hold championships in Charlotte, so you have to do all the logistical stuff to get everything set and organized, right? They do ACC media football, we're going to be there in 4 weeks.
Sure.
In Charlotte. Well, to me, if you're going to be doing all of your stuff in Charlotte, just be based in Charlotte.
There are studios in Charlotte, too.
Exactly. So, to me, just logistically, that would just make sense.
Sure, that would be fine.
Yeah.
But where HQ is, is immaterial to anything else. In fact, and I made this suggestion, and I think it would be funny, I would just get the most tricked-out RV you could find.
There you go.
I would get like a Madden Cruiser on steroids.
Nice.
And that's the conference office.
Okay.
And Jim Phillips can just drive. You get a driver.
Just take the Blue Ridge Parkway.
He wouldn't drive himself, although that would also be great.
That'd make some good ACC network.
Right. Hey, Jim Phillips is famous for carrying around a backpack.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, you get an incredibly tricked out SUV. And Jim Phillips can just be driven around the ACC footprint. And today, headquarters is Clemson. Tomorrow, headquarters is Atlanta. And we're just living in the RV. And that's, get a post office box. We don't need anything else. Nothing happens at headquarters. It is purely symbolic. But I do understand the symbolism of where home is. Right, I understand the symbolism of where home is. It just doesn't matter. To the league, it just doesn't matter where home is. With that said, I will throw this ad. This is an add-on in the bill that at least four additional tournaments in, I believe it's ACC men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, have to be held in North Carolina to get this one-time $15 million payout. So it's essentially what the state ledge is doing is they're trying to buy the ACC staying home. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, if you wanted to have your headquarters in Orlando, I mean, heck, you could have it at Walt Disney World. I mean, Disney owns ESPN, and the ACC is already in bed with ESPN. So you could just, I don't even know if, I haven't been to Disney World in 30 years. So I'm not even actually, yeah, about 30 years. So is there still a Skyway to Tomorrowland? I mean, they could have a Skyway to ACC land. I actually, one of my favorite rides of all time is, I think, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride? That's gone.
Okay.
I think that's gone, or the teacup. Made me sick all the time. I think that's also, who knows? I have no idea what's there. Epcot Center. The future of college sports with NIL displays and all that. Look, if you wanted to have your headquarters there, fine. But the state legislature in North Carolina is trying to buy the ACC staying home. And I get it. All right, so here is my... because a lot of people think it's tied to where the tournament is, the basketball tournament is, mm-hmm. right? ACC football is going to be in Charlotte for the foreseeable future. I can see an occasional year where they go to Florida.
Maybe.
Occasional. But Charlotte's a good spot for it. It is because we don't know the teams that are going to be in it. It's centrally located. It's the most central location for the league. You got Miami all the way at the southern tip, Boston College or Syracuse at the northern tip, or Pitt, or Notre Dame eventually, but not that Notre Dame is involved in it now. So right now, Charlotte's kind of the midpoint.
It's the closest to Clemson.
Right. It is.
That's really what it comes down to. It's the closest to Clemson.
Hey, I said yesterday that I was impressed by the overwhelming number of NC State fans. Mm-hmm. That embraced State's annual football game with Clemson, as opposed to looking at it, hey, why do we have to play Clemson every year when UNC only has to play Clemson, you know, two times out of every four? Right? Why do we have to play them every year? And I get it. I totally understand if that would be your mindset. But I appreciate the fact that State fans are like, yeah, bring it on. Just win them. Just win enough of them. Otherwise, you'll eventually be mad at it. Although maybe they're just setting themselves up to have something over. You know, it's like an argument winner. Well, we have a much tougher schedule than you because you get to play, both teams get to play Duke, but you get to play Virginia, who probably will just be okay.
Yeah.
Right? UVA, in historically speaking, is basically just okay. Anyway, that was an aside. But so people think that the basketball tournament's location is tied to where headquarters is. And I would argue that, why would you think that? The ACC men's basketball tournament should go to, like, destination cities. But here's what I would do, and I've said this before. I think the ACC tournament's going to Greensboro in March. So in March of 23, for the 70th ACC men's basketball tournament, mm-hmm. it'll be in Greensboro. I would treat Greensboro like the RNA treats St. Andrews, or the USGA treats Pebble Beach. It's probably closer to Pebble Beach or Pinehurst in the future, in that, yeah, you're going to be back there on a rotating basis, you know, every X amount of years. So next year, or this upcoming March, we're in Greensboro. And then the following year, we're in D.C., 24. And I would go D.C. again, 25. Go to Charlotte, 26, 27. I'd essentially be using Charlotte and Washington, D.C. as, air quotes, permanent hosts of the ACC tournament.
Primary host.
Yeah, very good. Primary.
Yes.
I think DC is the best
ACC term.
I've been saying this for last 6-7 years. Or when was the last time it was up there with Carolina beating Virginia in the title game. DC is the best place for it. Mm-hmm. You are not going to convince me otherwise. I would never go to Brooklyn again, ever. Brooklyn is a waste of time. It's too expensive. It's Brooklyn. It's not Madison Square Garden. If you can't go to MSG, don't even bother with New York City.
Yeah, I was there in Brooklyn this year for the ACC tournament. I was like, ah, no thanks.
Yeah, it's just, it's, believe it or not, it's inconvenient,
yeah.
Brooklyn. And you would think that with New York City, everything is convenient. Mm-mm. MSG is convenient. Brooklyn is not. So I would scrap Brooklyn for the duration. DC's the best spot. I think Charlotte's the next best spot. And then if you wanted to bring it to Atlanta once in a while, fine. Or if you want, look, I enjoyed it in Tampa. If you want to go down and bring it to the state of Florida, go to Tampa or Miami once, that's okay. If you wanted to hit Boston once, that's fine too. Hell, if Notre Dame's in the league for basketball, bring it to Chicago once. Goof off. Right, have some fun, but
yes,
ultimately
take it to the Big East territory, right, or Big Ten territory.
But ultimately, I just keep it in D.C. and Charlotte, and then use Greensboro for like special days. So I'd have the 75th. I mean, 75th anniversary of the ACC tournament should be in Greensboro.
Yeah,
and then you know maybe I'd come back for 80 or 85 or. Do it on an even number year, come back in 2035 or something like that, mm-hmm. Right? But, yeah, I would – Greensboro can't be the permanent place for it. It can't be the most frequent place for it because Greensboro doesn't offer enough for people. It just doesn't. Like, frankly, Winston-Salem offers more for people than Greensboro does. Mm. And I guess it's you're close enough to Winston-Salem, but you'd have to get in a car, right? So it's no longer about basketball. The tournament stopped being about basketball when we ended up with 15 teams. It just can't be. It's about entertaining business, you know, clients. That's what the ACC tournament has become. It has become a corporate event. And all these schools are trying to get business from whomever. And they need to entertain them, and you're not going to entertain them with only basketball. Basketball is the additive. Everything else, you want restaurants, you want recreation, you want things to do. And DC offers more things to do. Charlotte offers more things to do. Hotel, restaurants, nightlife, things like that. So that's what I would do. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on. Sad news from ACC Network headquarters. I don't really have much to say about this other than it was announced today at the end of their show, but Packer and Durham, mm-hmm, will stop on Friday. That'll be the last Packer and Durham. Both Mark Packer and Wes Durham, both friends of this program, will stay with the ACC, with the ACC network. Packer will be repurposed somewhere else. Durham will expand his play-by-play schedule. But Packer and Durham, which was the first, you know, daily show on the ACC network, had a run of over 1,000 programs, but it will cease to operate as of Friday. Friday will be the last show. So that's kind of upsetting. I have more ACC things to point out before I bring it back to something else. Because this kind of just popped into my head right before we started the show. So yesterday the ACC announced a 3-5-5 scheduling format for football. Three permanent partners. Some people are mad, whatever. And then a split of the 10 remaining football ACC members. 5 1-year, and then the next year, and then 5 the third year and the fourth year. Mm-hmm. So you would play everybody at least once every 3 years. Yeah, you would never go more than 3 years without or more, you never go more than 2 years without playing somebody in the league.
I know the ACC basically just set the schedule for the next four seasons after this one. I think they're going to revisit those primary members after 4 years, I believe.
That's
because they didn't necessarily call them permanent. They just called them primary.
Okay, that's fine.
So I think they're a way they can, if they feel like they can move it around, they can.
That's okay. You should always leave yourself flexibility to do everything. But it occurred to me that in basketball, we already don't have divisions, which is good, right? We don't need divisions in basketball. But here's where you can really lean on tradition. They don't have a schedule plan going forward in hoops. Maybe they feel like they don't need to change it. I disagree. And I've always thought this. Because here's where you can lean more on tradition for permanent partners. You can create for instance, there's no reason why Wake doesn't play Carolina twice every year and State twice every year in basketball. Although they do play State twice a year in basketball, right? Duke plays Wake twice and Carolina twice. They only play State once, although they will play twice this year. It just worked out that way. But that's where you can rely on tradition to make your schedule. If we're playing 20 conference basketball games, and we are, which is whatever. I'm not in favor of that, but that's fine. It doesn't really matter, I don't think. You play so many games that it really doesn't matter how they schedule within the league. It's already not fair, so why try to make it fair? So here's what I would do with ACC scheduling. We'll talk to Chip Patterson about this a little bit later on. I would make the best television schedule I could. I mean, seriously, going into each season, maybe I don't, but there are people who do, know who the best teams are going to be. Right, so let's just say that we think going into this year that Carolina, Duke, and I'm going to randomly pick schools here, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Louisville. We think these are going to be the best five teams. I would make sure that they played each other twice. Don't care if it unfairly weights a schedule towards one school or another, or it not, you know, makes a one team schedule harder than somebody else's schedule. If you're good, you're going to get in the tournament. It doesn't matter. And then we can look at, man, strength of schedule and all the quad one, blah, blah, all of that stuff that we spew at the end. We can do that because there's safety in numbers of a basketball schedule. You really can't do that in football because, I mean, unless we have a 32-team football tournament, if you lose twice, you're pretty much done. Or if they expand, even if they expand to 16, which I don't think they will. But even if they did, you can get away with two losses, but you're probably not getting away with three. So you have to be careful in how you schedule. In basketball, hell, we had teams get in with double-digit losses all the time. Carolina lost. Did they lose 10 times?
I think so. They're like 21-10, I think.
That was their final record, so they only lost 9, I think, during the regular season. Either way, teams get in with double-digit losses routinely. It's not a big deal. So I would not be concerned at all about being fair, equitable, in the basketball schedule. I would make the best TV schedule I could. I would let the best teams play against each other. And the added benefit to this is that you can have the middle tier of teams and even the lower tier of teams play the bottom more, and there will be teams with bad records. There are always teams with bad records in every league, but maybe you elevate other records. So if a team, and again, just using this as an example, if NC State is probably a middle-tier team and you allow them to play more teams in the bottom, they're obviously going to play teams at the top. Win a couple of those or one of those and elevate your profile, maybe we're talking about if this benefiting teams. If the whole goal is to get more teams in the tournament, maybe this is the better way to do it. I would not have any formula for basketball. I would have some primary partners that you want to play for traditional reasons, and then I would make the best schedule I could for television and then try to benefit the bottom of the league. Only makes sense to me. Only makes sense. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can, are you willing to do that or that? Yellow means liquid money. You can get it anytime. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. The NFL is in court times two, so to speak, because really, neither of these situations are about courts, but they are about the law. Daniel Wallach from Wallach Legal, at Wallach Legal on Twitter. But more importantly, the Conduct Detrimental podcast. If you are interested in sports and law and the convergence of the two, you must stop here as often as possible. I do. It helps me out along the way. Let's talk about Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Washington Commandos. I will never use the real name now. He's never going to testify, I believe, on Capitol Hill. But how can he legally avoid the subpoena?
He's going to file a lawsuit. And by the way, thank you for the nice words about conduct detrimental.
That's great.
He's not going to wait. He's not going to wait to be held in contempt of Congress the moment he's served with a subpoena, if he's ever served. I mean, remember, he's in France, and his lawyers, on urgent commandos-related business. And you can't serve somebody overseas very easily at all. It'll take months for that to happen. So he can really stay out of bounds and avoid having to ever worry about this issue. But at some point, he's going to come back because it's a public relations issue. If he's seen as evading a subpoena, that's probably going to be grounds for the league to do something even more seriously to him, because then he's looking like he's skirting the edges of the law if he hasn't already done that. So the next battleground will be the lawsuit challenging the subpoena. I mean, he's not the first congressional witness who's tried to use the courts to avoid testifying before Congress. Remember, we had a parade of witnesses or would-be witnesses in the Donald Trump impeachment proceedings that rather than comply with the subpoena, they filed lawsuits asserting what I thought were specious grounds of executive privilege. Maybe some of them had good grounds, but the vast majority of them had very tenuous basis to assert the presidential executive privilege, but they sought to avail themselves of a court ruling to clarify the status. Dan Snyder's going to do the exact same thing. And the moment he served with a subpoena, that's going to start the clock ticking on the filing of a federal court lawsuit in the District of Columbia federal court system. And he'll argue that Congress doesn't have the jurisdiction to investigate him and to single him out for punishment. That belongs to prosecutors. That belongs to the court system. Mm-hmm. The job of Congress is to simply pass laws. And that's going to be sort of the bulkhead of his legal argument when he files a lawsuit. And it'll also assert the attorney-client privilege to cover the vast majority of materials that are going to be kind of wrapped up in the Beth Wilkinson investigation. So I think his legal strategy is pretty easy to telegraph, and we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop, which is the service of a subpoena whenever that happens.
he's on a boat somewhere in the French Riviera. So I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. Look, personally, I think the whole idea of a congressional hearing, the House Oversight Committee, this is a bad idea to me. Grandstanding to even have this. If you're really interested in workplace, conduct, yes, I understand the commandos are a high-profile company with a long history of workplace misconduct. But it seems to me that there's just a lot of people trying to make, you know, make public points. And the hearings are always going to be a sham. Half the people asking questions have no interest in doing this either. Let me ask you about Roger Goodell, who appeared on a Zoom call. I thought he was disingenuous at best. He doesn't have the power to force Dan Snyder to sell, but he certainly has he has influence, you know, because it has to be a 20, I think 24 of 31 other owners have to vote him out. But he certainly has influence, and he can make suggestions. And he made it seem like he has no influence at all.
Yeah, I think he was being disingenuous with the House Oversight Committee, and it's more than just influence and more than just a suggestion. The NFL Constitution and bylaws empower the commissioner to actually make a formal recommendation to the executive committee to initiate proceedings that would force an NFL owner who violated, you know, the other provisions of the Constitution or conduct detrimental provisions to be forced to sell. The burden starts with him. He has to initiate the process of making that formal recommendation. So he's a critical, integral part of the process that would lead Dan Snyder to be forced to sell his interest. He has to start it. Mm-hmm. So for Goodell to say, hey, there's nothing I can do about it, it's just an outright, if it's not an outright lie, it's contravened and contradicted by the plain language of the Constitution, which gives him that power to start the process. If he believes that there's been a violation of either the NFL Constitution or any of the, you know, so-called amorphous conduct detrimental provisions that appear in every league document.
Now we can see why the name of Daniel Wallach's podcast is called Conduct Detrimental, since we've worked in two mentions of that just in common discourse. I think it's fantastic. Conduct Detrimental is the podcast. Here's the thing about it. I believe this, and I joked around, is that if only Daniel Snyder was as honorable as the late Jerry Richardson, former owner of the Carolina Panthers, who sold his team after it came out that they had their own workplace issues that he was directly involved in. And we know that Daniel Snyder has been cited and has been sued. And there's just a long history of Daniel Snyder and misconduct with this. My feeling is that Snyder knows enough about the goings on around the league that maybe the other owners are afraid that if they push him out, that it's going to come back on them.
I think they might be more afraid of the precedent that would set, that would lead. You know, every owner has probably their own problems in-house. It may not be something that Dan Snyder's going to expose, but if it takes workplace issues where employees have been mistreated to sort of begin the process to force an owner out, I mean, every other owner of their teams would have to look internally and wonder, well, do I have the same problem? To virtually every team at some point or another has been sued for employment discrimination, failure to promote. There are all these problems. I mean, none worse than the Washington Commanders, obviously. But if you set the precedent where, these accusations from employees over a toxic workplace environment, sexual harassment, racial discrimination, those exist in virtually every corner of American life, or American corporate life. So it could create a scenario where other owners are going to become vulnerable themselves based upon actions that took place in the past. And maybe these things should happen, but I think that's what they're afraid of. If Dan Snyder tries to sort of expose the inner workings of the National Football League, he'll be sued into oblivion. These billionaires are not going to be cowed by threats from Dan Snyder, because collectively and even individually, they're more powerful than him. And in a court of law, in a jury of his quote-unquote peers, I don't think Dan Snyder is going to do too well. And to use the press, to use his inside information to embarrass others, he will be sued and in litigation for the rest of his life. And that's going to define the rest of his life, while the other owners are going to continue on with the business of the National Football League. So unless he has smoking gun, which he could have.
I bet he does.
that could embarrass or lead to the resignation of someone like Roger Goodell, or maybe force other owners to have to sell their interests based on conversations and internal, you know, memos and emails. Maybe he has that.
All I know is this, Daniel. There's something that he has that convinced Roger Goodell to not have a written report on the investigation into the workplace practices of the Washington Commandos. There's a reason why that didn't go that there wasn't anything published.
If you want that written report, it's going to come out in one of two ways. Forget Dan Snyder, forget Roger Goodell. Why don't you subpoena Beth Wilkinson if you're the House Oversight Committee? Of course, she's an attorney. She's not going to be able to divulge attorney-client confidences, but there are ways to ask her questions as to, A, did she have a recommendation that was different than what the NFL ultimately punished Snyder for? And if she, and that's not privileged information. I don't think that's privileged. And the answer to that question could really bolster, you know, some of the reporting out there that she was prepared to recommend that Snyder be forced to sell the team. That's not legal advice. And the House committee can challenge any assertions of attorney-client privilege by pointing to a long line of case law and congressional authority that says this is not a litigation proceeding. The attorney-client privilege doesn't count in congressional investigations, and the chairman of the committee has the discretion to disregard privileges and force the witness to answer. So if they want to get to the heart of it, why are they skirting around the edges and interviewing owners and commissioners who are simply not going to talk, and they're going to protect their own, the shield and their own financial well-being? Beth Wilkinson, on the other hand, has a story to tell if she's permitted to tell that story. And there's a way to adroitly and cleverly and smartly answer candid questions without intruding upon client confidences. So I don't know if that's a line that can be walked here, but I mean, let's get right to it. Let's bring Wilkinson before Congress, and why don't we subpoena the custodian of all these investigative records, because they're the ones who can be forced to produce these records to Congress. They already possess it. So rather than target Goodell or Snyder, there are other participants in this investigation that might have, A, a more compelling story to tell, and B, provide a quicker pathway to getting some of these materials released.
This is why people need to go and listen to the Conduct Detrimental podcast, because you're very thorough, Daniel Wallach, and I love talking to you. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. We didn't even get to the other legal issue, the Deshaun Watson thing. So I will direct everybody to June 22. That episode is the Deshaun Watson partial, in parentheses, settlement episode. Check out the podcast, Conduct Detrimental. We'll talk again very soon. I hope you have a good July 4th weekend, we'll connect again very soon, man.
Well, I have a feeling it's going to be sooner than very soon, given the pace at which things are happening. Always a pleasure, Adam. Thank you for having me on your program, and I look forward to the next time, as always. Thank you.
You got it. Daniel Wallach, at Wallach Legal on Twitter. Again, the podcast is great. They will help you understand these things a lot faster than I can, although you need to listen to the show anyway.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
So Baker Mayfield, it's not going away, folks. I know we joked about 2 weeks ago that I thought the Baker Mayfield thing had been shot down based on not being able to make a move during the draft. But nope. Almost every day, somebody writes something about, well, Baker Mayfield's going to go to the Panthers. Kimberly A. Martin from ESPN. Yep, there we go.
Baker's right in that both sides want to move on. That hasn't happened yet, but if it happens, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens in training camp, by training camp, because all these teams, before the Deshaun Watson, all these teams understood, independent of Deshaun, that the Browns wanted to move Baker. My expectation is that Carolina would be the destination if, in fact, he is traded. Never say never. Is there a scenario where a trade doesn't come through? Yes. Is there a scenario where, because of that, Baker is still a Brown come training camp in week one? Yes, it is possible, but very, very unlikely because both sides want to move on.
Like, there's no way that Baker Mayfield's showing up to training camp.
No.
There's just no way. They went out, they signed Jacoby Brissett. They gave Deshaun Watson $230 million.
Yeah.
It now appears more and more likely that there won't be a year-long suspension, so that Watson will miss maybe not even half the year. That's going to be a very, very dark day for the NFL. I mean, whether or not 20 of the lawsuits were settled out of court, there are still six others pending, and maybe even more on the horizon. The NFL wanted an indefinite suspension.
Yeah.
Probably not going to get that. They're probably going to have to attach an actual duration to it. But it now seems what they're leaking out is that they would accept 6 to 8 games. So what you're telling me is that what Ezekiel Elliott did and what Deshaun Watson did are the same.
God.
That you can't. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the NFL is not going to come out of this looking good.
No.
With that said, Watson is their quarterback. Brissett is their backup and likely would play even if Watson is gone for a year. Brissett would be their quarterback. Baker Mayfield ain't showing up to play for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. It's like someone that you were in a relationship with decided to move on to someone else. They have a big fat ring on their fingers. Like, oh, by the way, you want to come to the wedding? It's next week.
Yeah,
I think
ultimately
you broke up with me.
Right. Ultimately, they're going to release Baker Mayfield. But man, the Panthers just might be desperate enough. I just hope they don't give up an asset. If I'm going to put myself in the Panthers, in a Panthers fan position. I don't believe Baker is the guy that's going to get me where I really need to go. I think Baker's better than the current guy, but he's not the guy. The last thing I would want to do is give up something that I might need. In other words, an asset. So if they were willing to just take an even swap, Darnold for Baker, I'd do that. Or if the asset that I have to give up is like a 6th-round pick in exchange for you to pick up part of the contract, I might do that.
Maybe.
But I don't want Baker so much that I'm giving up anything for it. And my fear is that the Panthers can't help themselves. That's my fear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a really good point.
That chocolate cake looks so good. I know I shouldn't have it, but my gosh, the icing looks delicious. Yeah. Just give me a little sliver.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.